would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might want to stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Welcome to St. John Forward Radio. I'm your host, John Forward, here in New Brunswick. We're moving into the next phase of easing down on the lockdown. They're reopening a few more things, which, according to many of my friends on Facebook, is going to be the decline of all civilization forever. So we'll see how that goes. I, for one, am happy that they're letting up on the rules a little bit. As a natural bad boy, I don't like being told what to do, so this has been a particularly trying time for me. I've always been a bad boy ever since I was a kid. My favorite thing to do when I was a kid was throwing rocks. One of my earliest memories was I was probably 4 years old, sitting on the front curb in front of my own house with my friend Luke from next door, waiting for cars to drive by in the subdivision that had their windows rolled down, and we would just chuck rocks inside their windows. And that was some good clean fun until some genius realized that if there are children throwing rocks at your face while you're driving, probably in front of their own home, you can just stop your car and go in and tattle on them. So that was that. But, you know, I've got some bad boy tendencies in me, but I also feel like I'm stuck playing the role that that people assign me. I remember my first day of third grade. My teacher looked at me, and just because of the look of my face, I guess, because I never did anything, she just said, "I know I'm going to have a problem with you this year." And I was like, "Well, now you will." And, you know, I gave her as much trouble as I could. But, yeah, it was. I should clarify that I was a bad boy on a curve. I was a French immersion bad kid, which is a step lower than the bad kids in the English schools that I found out later in life. Even in the French immersion school, it was like English kids, French immersion boys who smoke cigarettes, and then John Forward right below that. So I wasn't as bad as I could have been, but you know, I was still quite the bad boy. At one point my parents, got tired of me getting in trouble at school so often that, they threatened to move me from the French immersion school to the full on French school down the hill. And, that was terrifying. I didn't want to do that. You had to pass a test to get into the French school to make sure that, you know, your French was good enough. And in retrospect, the easy thing would have been to just bomb the test, but that didn't occur to me at the time. So I nailed the test. I was good at tests. The muscle memory just kicked in. Part of the reason I think I was motivated to do well in school was just it was a little bit of spite. There's nothing better than antagonizing a teacher all week and then getting a test back that she had to write "good job" or "bon job" on the top of it. So that's probably why I did that. But I got into a lot of trouble at school. I was also quite aggressive, but that's kind of a family values thing that I brought to school with me. In the Forward house, when somebody did something you didn't like, you just hit them until they stop. And that's how you solve problems. It's a cause and effect thing. It's very simple. Like, for example, I mouth off to my mom, and then the effect of that is now I need to dodge a full jar of pickles that she has thrown at my head. Cause and effect. And certainly didn't help things when my parents split up when I was in third grade, and I was stuck with full-time mom. I got into to fist fights every single day at school from like grades 4 through 7. Just had a lot of aggression that I needed to get out. Fourth grade in particular was rough. You can't see this on the video, but I've still got scars on these four fingers from when I decided to conduct a science experiment and stick a paper clip into a wall outlet just to see what happened. My hair was very similar to what it is now. And another time in fourth grade, I remember... you used to be able to get collectible things in bags of chips back in those days. And one thing that particularly caught on for me was one kind of chips. You would buy them and they would come with these little collectible stickers of various classic cars, which I didn't care about cars before or after that. But I was a very big fan of potato chips. So the two kind of bled together. I was... big on collecting those little car stickers. I had this poster that he gets so you could put your car stickers on it and see your whole collection all in one convenient place. And one day I was not paying attention in school and just looking at my sweet car poster in class, and the teacher wasn't happy with that, so she took my car poster away from me and just ripped it in half in front of my face. And I was not impressed, so I did the logical thing and I picked up my chair and over my head and chased the teacher around the classroom for 15 minutes. I didn't catch her. I was also a fat child, probably from eating all of the chips, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do when somebody aggresses upon your person. And my love of rock throwing came back in around fourth grade, but I wasn't alone. That was the big trend in school. All the kids were doing it. Everybody was throwing rocks all the time. It got so bad that that the school had to give up on the don't throw rocks wording instruction, I guess. They had to build targets for us to throw rocks at so that we wouldn't throw them at each other. Just there was about a half dozen like 2x2 plywood targets that we would just throw rocks at every day, every recess, every lunch hour. Part of what got that going was one day I hit my friend Mark in the face with a snowball and it split open his eyebrow and he was bleeding everywhere. There was a rock hidden in it, and there were some questions asked, and it's hard to verbalize my logic in that yes, I hit my friend in the face with a snowball on purpose for no particular reason, but I didn't mean for there to also be a rock in there. So, I don't know. I was just impulsive and violent, which is a great combo. We used to torture substitute teachers back in those days. There was a handful of them that we regularly made cry. I remember one day that the class was in such like chaos and pandemonium. It was super noisy. I was hanging out at the back of the room behind the bookcase with some friends, and they had a spare overhead projector sitting on the floor. And I decided, you know what? I'm just going to stomp this thing and smash the glass out as hard as I can. And the class was in such disarray that nobody even heard the sound of the shattering glass. And, it wasn't always violent lashing out. Sometimes I use my words. One of the substitute teachers was calling a roll call one day, Jonathan Forward, and I got all indignant, and with the help of some of my classmates, convinced her that Jonathan is pronounced how it's spelled, Joe Nathan, which is what she called me for the next 3 years. So that was fun. You know, things went better the more I used to figure out how to talk my way in and out of things. I remember one day, I was probably in seventh grade, our class was moving from gym class to science class, and there was a big ball of masking tape that we were just kind of kicking down the hallway like a soccer ball and throwing it at each other and just having a grand old time. and we got into science class, and I had the tape ball, and there was somebody up, a friend of mine was up a few rows ahead of me, and I was gonna whip this thing at the back of his head, but I didn't have very good aim, and I missed, and the tape ball smacked up against the chalkboard while the teacher was turned around writing something, and Mr. Maya, he lost his mind a bit, and he wouldn't let anybody leave the class until he knew who was responsible for throwing the tape ball. After a few minutes, it didn't look like he was gonna ease up on it. So I was like, "It was me," and of course they sent me to the office, which happened quite a bit to me in those days, and got the dreaded threat of the phone call home, which is how the schools outsource child abuse to the parents because they weren't allowed to do it. But the one advantage I did have was that the only thing that that pissed my mom off more than me being a French immersion bad boy was a school administrator bothering her at work. And I knew this because the previous time that I got a phone call was because a substitute teacher put me out in the hallway because I had like my textbook up blocking my face from like the million spitballs that were flying around the classroom. And when the vice principal called my mom at work about that, just, you know, I told the class that if I see anybody out in the hallway, they're getting a call home. And my mom just tore a strip off this guy for bothering her at work and used lots of colorful language. I got my mom called at work about the tape ball incident, and I'd convinced them to let me talk to my mom privately, which how could I not be clearly lying, but they went along with it, and just kind of on the down low, I told my mom, like, "Okay, Mom, I know this sounds bad, but you gotta know I'm not the one who threw the tape ball. I just was worried that somebody else was going to tattle on me anyway because they all thought that I did it because everybody saw me playing with it out in the hallway. And so I just thought it was better to get ahead of it, and I volunteered. But don't tell anybody, though." And my mom was like, "Oh, no, you put that vice principal back on the phone right now." And, "Oh, no, Mom, don't." But my mom talked to the vice principal and convinced him that you know, I was just the fall guy in this big tape ball conspiracy, and you know, her son shouldn't have to be the scapegoat for this type of thing. And originally I was banned from participating in all three of the big winter carnival activities that were going on in the school that month, but my mom managed to get my sentence knocked down to I got to choose which of the three activities that I didn't get to do. So I went to the one that involved eating, obviously. I went to the afternoon school dance because, you know, I don't want to miss out on hugging a girl and walking around in a circle while we both pretend that I don't have a raging erection. But the skating party is the one that I volunteered to miss out on, mostly because I didn't like doing it anyway. Not a huge fan of physical activity, but going skating was so boring anyway. Under any circumstances, I hate going to skating parties. I mean, sometimes somebody would fall down and bust their teeth off the ice, but it's not usually that exciting. Most of the time, it's just around and around and around and around and around. Like, the public skate is Canadian NASCAR, and I was not interested. I literally had more fun throwing a ball of masking tape around. And I've got a great show lined up for you after this next thing, whatever that's gonna be. I've got my guest Mike Rogers. We talked the other day. He's a local barber, so we talked about you know, all the people bothering him to get haircuts and when stuff's gonna be open and various other things. So stay tuned for that. I hope you enjoy the show.
The spear, you're the nail on the cross, you're the fly in my beer, you're the key that got lost. You're the letter from Jesus on the bathroom wall. Your mother superior with only a bra. You're the same, you're the same, you're the same kind of man as me. You're the same kind of man as me. I'm the head on the bed, I'm the coffee instead. I'm the fish that could bait, I'm the detective of late. I'm the blood on the floor, the thunder and the roar. I'm the boat that won't sink, I just won't sleep a wink. You're the same kind of bed as me.
Good, you say? Well, that's good enough for me.
You're the wreath that caught fire. You're the priest of the choir. You bite down on the sheet, but your teeth have been wired. You skid in the rain. You're trying to shift. You're grinding the gears. You're trying to shift. And you're the same kind of bad as me. You're the same kind of bad as me. She's the same kind of bad as me. You're the same kind of bad as me.
They told me you were no good, but I know you take care of all my needs. You're the same kind of bad as me.
I'm the mattress in the back, I'm the old gunny sack. I'm the one with the gun, most likely to run. I'm the car in the weeds, if you cut me, I bleed. You're the same kind of bad as me. You're the same kind of bad as me.
So welcome back to the show. We've got local barber, comedian, roller derby announcer guy, whatever else he does. Mike Rogers is with us via the internet. How are you doing, Mike?
A little shack wacky, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
Yeah. So we're a bit delayed. Was the phone call that you were on because of the nonsense happening that we were just talking about?
Yeah. So some people may not know, I'm on the board of directors for the Barber Association. And every once in a while, I get hit with some really bizarre questions and comments during this COVID stuff, which I usually can just refer them back to our webpage or whatever our last statement was. But for some reason, there's been this weird message that Blaine Higgs was announcing today that barbershops open Monday. And it looked like a weird official document, but nobody in the government has been able to confirm that that actually is real. And it's contrary to everything they said yesterday and this morning, and the fact that there is no announcement today, there's just a lot of parts that don't make sense. So
you're a barber also, in addition to being on the board. I've seen you posting that it seems like you're getting inundated with people asking for on the D-Lo haircuts.
Oh my God, are they ever?
How many per day?
I'm usually getting two or three a day.
Okay.
Now, back when this first happened, it'd be seven or eight a day. Most people are pretty understanding about it, but yeah, there are quite a few that get to the point of like high-end bribery. And there were a few that I was real tempted to take up on. I'm not going to lie. I'm not made of stone.
Yeah.
Somebody's offering you $400 for a haircut. The government hadn't quite started paying out yet. I was real tempted. If I hadn't had people I'm living with be immunocompromised, I probably would have took it. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, so okay, so you live with people that you need to worry about. So even if, like, you'd posted that you have to worry about losing your license if you did get caught, but it's not like if that wasn't the case, you still wouldn't be doing it anyway, right?
Oh, exactly. I wouldn't be doing it anyway. I mean, I had one guy who offered me actually a job to cut his hair. He's like, you come cut my hair, my company will hire you. You don't have to worry about losing your license.
It seems really weird. Like, I definitely could use a haircut, but I don't know what's going on where I would want to pay $400 for a haircut.
Oh, exactly. Sorry there. We're on phones and things are popping up. But yeah, no, I couldn't imagine needing that. But some of these people, some of my customers, I mean, they come from all walks of life. You've got the bottom of the bottom and the top of the top. And this guy is in a position to be able to offer jobs that pay relatively well in exchange for a haircut. So that can kind of get an idea where he is in life.
Yeah, it seems weird, though. I would just, for me, like the top of the top people, like, it's nice to have a good haircut, but it's not like you're going to show up at a meeting or something and have messy hair and everybody's going to think poorly of you. Everybody knows what the situation is.
I guess he had some press conferences that he had to do in regards to his company.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know if I'd want to work for somebody who's willing to put an employee at risk like that.
Yeah. Well, and if anything, I don't know how it works. Like, having a haircut in these days, on the one hand, I could see it as kind of a status symbol. Like, that's right, I'm not going to let them do that. But on the other hand, it's, I don't care about any of this.
Well, Dominic Cardi here locally is a great example of that. He gave himself a haircut, and it's probably the best haircut the guy's had in years. The only reason I know that is his wife's involved in roller derby, and I've offered to fix his haircut a lot.
Yeah.
So when I noticed that his haircut looked fantastic, I'm like, who the hell did he get to cut his hair? Turns out it was a home jobby. But still, like, people notice that now and are a little mistrusting of it.
Yeah. Well, even, like, it's weird seeing, like, some politicians seem to be still getting haircuts while talking about staying home and, you know, following the rules and stuff. Trudeau seems to be all wavy and letting it grow out, but like Andrew Scheer looks like he gets a haircut every morning when he wakes up.
Yeah, but I would argue Andrew Scheer looks like he's had his mom or his wife cut his hair since I've ever seen him in media. Yeah. So I mean, he's probably still going to the same person that he's allowed to actually go to because he lives with them.
Yeah, probably. And he's probably got a lifetime supply of hair gel sitting in a vat somewhere in his basement.
And he is quite a bit of an older guy, so there's a good chance that his hair just doesn't grow quick enough to necessitate it.
Could be. Yeah, mine's, I'm kind of, I'm laid off work, so I'm just letting it go. Like, I could just, I've got clippers I could get May to just buzz me down, but I don't know. I've got nowhere to be, so I want to just see what happens. And maybe if by the time I'm allowed to get a haircut, then I'll give you something more to work with and I can get something other than just a basic old buzz cut. I don't know.
It'll be interesting. I know I had to teach my mom how to cut my hair. we were having a bit of a mullet growing competition at the barbershop, and seeing as I'm more or less sequestered to a single room in the house, just because I'm the one going in and out of the house. If anybody was going to get infected, it was going to be me. So we better play social distancing at home.
Right.
So laying down a lot meant I was laying on a mullet a lot, which is incredibly uncomfortable to kind of lean and cream to watch TV or whatnot. So I went a little crazy one night, cut most of it off, and then had my mom clean it up for me after. And it's interesting to try to talk somebody else through how to do your haircut that doesn't know how to cut hair.
Yeah, well, like for a long time I was just having May just do the buzz cut, but like, which isn't complicated, you just put the right clipper on and just do it. But getting the back correctly is not really an easy thing to have somebody walk through.
You know what, it's actually surprisingly easy if you have somebody walk you through it.
Yeah.
I've walked a lot of people through doing their haircuts at home and getting the neckline right. so long as you have a clipper that has an adjustable blade on it that you can get like that halfway in between a guard,
yeah,
you can do a pretty good job of it. It's all in like this like rollout flip motion.
Yeah.
Good to go.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like for a long time I was doing that, but you know, once I had a job where I was making a bit of money, I'm like, what am I don't need to do this in my bathtub. I can support a barber and get it done properly.
Well, I mean, there's a good standard saying when it comes to haircuts like that. Never trust a man who cuts his own hair. Particularly in business, because if he's willing to cut corners there, what else is he willing to cut corners on in business?
Yeah.
I mean, a barber is the cheapest expert you can hire.
Yeah. Well, and even for a buzz cut, that which is probably the easiest haircut that you can do, there's other, I've grown the beard back out, that I'll probably lose that when I go back to work too, but just to get that all evened out and you know, maybe take care of the gnarly eyebrows a little bit and just kind of around the ears and the back, it's a little bit more complicated. Yeah.
You got it. You get that little bit of extra finesse that really cleans it up and makes it look sharp. Yeah. And the big thing I say to most people is it's kind of worth it to have somebody else have your mess as their problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the same thing for years, I was doing my own, like swapping my, my winter tires for my summer tires on the car. I've got them on their own set of rims, so I can get out the jack and do it wheel by wheel, but it takes me like an hour. Why don't I just pay somebody to do it in 15 minutes and do it properly?
And they get it torqued right. And the big thing too, when it comes to automotive stuff like that, is a liability thing.
Yeah.
If you fuck up your tires putting them on, that's your fault. If they do it and it causes an accident, that goes on to their insurance.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I don't even know what it means to have your wheels balanced. I think they put it on a thing and spin it. I don't know what that does or what they do with it, but it's something I didn't do for like 4 years.
Balancing a tire is really important in order to make it wear right.
Yeah.
What they do is, do you know the wheel weights on the side of your tire?
Those little like square like things?
Yeah, those are weights. They're made out of lead, and they help it so that when your tire spins, it's spinning in perfect balance. So rust can change that, wear can change that, everything can change that. So they spin it on a thing and see where it wobbles, and they put the weights on it to stop it from wobbling.
Yeah.
It's really, really quite neat and quite important.
Yeah. Yeah, and just it's a pain in the ass to do it yourself without like a big like an electronic or like a air compressor like torque wrench and being able to jack up the whole car. Like if this is going to take me an hour, like I'd rather just get somebody that knows what they're doing to do it.
I'm not that way with tires because I worked in the automotive industry for a while. So tires isn't a big deal to me. I've got the torque wrench. I've got the tools to do it. Oil changes for me are a big one.
Yeah.
Because the cost of an oil change is mostly the material.
Yeah.
The little bit of labor that you actually are paying for in an oil change, for me, is worth it to not have to deal with the oil. It's a messy, dirty thing. By doing it myself, I save like, I don't know, $20.
Yeah.
But the 45 minutes to an hour it's going to take for me to get everything together, then the 45 minutes to an hour that it's going to take me to do it and then clean up after it, because I'm probably going to spill it. So there's another hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll pay somebody $20 to cover 3 hours of my time.
Yeah, and then you've got a bucket of dirty oil that you need to dispose of.
If it all gets in the bucket.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but when I'm draining things from things, it never goes as planned.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the floor around my toilet's not in good shape. But but yeah, so like I don't think I've ever attempted to change my own oil. I know how. Like I know how to take out the filter and you just open up the little plug on the bottom and let the oil drain out. But yeah, that's a pain.
It's a pain. And to do it right, because when you're doing it at home, usually your vehicle's at an angle.
Yeah.
So you're never properly draining all of the oil out correctly.
Yeah.
It's a pain. I mean, I've done enough using a curb out front of the house, because in a pinch that works. But still, you're not getting a full drain. So that means you've still got dirty oil going through it. And mixing clean oil with dirty oil, you're not really getting any advantage to that change.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. It's the Mayor Comedy, Shane Ogden, and this is 107.3 FM, St. John Forward Radio.
Dear God, I haven't been to a No Jokes Bard show since February. I don't know how long I can keep this up before I just throw it all away and French kiss a bat and a pangolin.
On the 58th day of quarantine, I said, let there be jokes! None of them will be barred.
No Jokes Barred will be online for the first time ever and finally available for a worldwide audience. Saturday, May 16th, 8:30 p.m. Atlantic time on Zoom. Go to johnforward.com for details. So, how are you, you making out with this whole shutdown thing anyway? Taking lots of smoke breaks? What else are you doing to keep busy?
Other than that, a lot of video games. I've discovered I'm not very artsy when I don't have access to people. That is both bothersome because I kind of hate people, but they're also my biggest inspiration for literally everything I do.
Yeah, well, being a stand-up is a good mix because, you know, they're there to support you, but it's not like a direct interaction. You can tell them to shut up if you don't like what they're doing.
It's true, but most of my material also comes from them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's a big thing. I haven't been doing much writing over this whole thing just because I'm not having interactions with other people. I've gone to the well. Yesterday, I sat down for like an hour and wrote a bit about stuff like from when I was a kid. I don't have any current life events to write about, but that was nice. I kind of felt like I should take the opportunity to write more, but it's hard to be the deadline of like I've got a show this weekend and I got to come up with something is a bit more motivation to get something done.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna try to get a couple of new bits. I've also got a show this weekend. I think, are we on the same one?
Yeah, Giles is on Saturday. Yeah.
So I'm gonna try to update a handful of my bits that I've had from before because it's gonna be a whole new audience who's gonna be seeing stuff, so I can. Yeah. Recycle some stuff, but I still should probably talk about what's going on.
It's weird to not talk about the elephant in the room, but there's also like everybody's probably going to have the same jokes.
Well, I'm looking at more taking my jokes that I already had and just changing up some transitions to them.
If you can definitely take something existing and just add an angle to it. Like I think I've watched a few more, but I've only performed, if you can call it that, on a couple of these Zoom comedy shows. And I've got like two or three short, dumb little coronavirus lockdown jokes that I'll throw out at the beginning. I haven't really been doing much. I didn't really do much for new material on either of those. Although, like, one of them I did, like, sometimes if I'm on a show and I'm on late in the show, I'll just take notes throughout the show and kind of make fun of the show and the other people that were on before me. So I did that one on the first one that I did, and that was fun. I just feel like, as awkward as it is, I think it's slightly less awkward if you're kind of acknowledging what's happening right now and not just pretending that this is a regular stand-up show.
Yeah. Well, you've got to apply it to the room. If you ignore what's happening in the room or you ignore what's happening in the world, you're kind of missing the point. Most people want to be able to laugh at their situation.
Yeah.
Not just kind of ignore it and hope it goes away.
Yeah. And I did another one with Brian Giles a couple of weeks ago with some people that he knew from Texas. I was just going to watch because he was on it and we were going to do this for the show after he was done. But somebody dropped out, so he put me in. And those people never heard my stuff, so I just did a greatest hits. I did my bit about Diamond, and I just set it up with, like, I miss going to the strip club, and then just went into my usual thing.
Now, did you update that bit about Diamond?
Diamond's not the one who died, if that's what you're intonating. I don't think Diamond is dead. It's possible.
Yeah, we also didn't think the other one was dead either, so.
Yeah, rest in peace, Giselle. But at least my bit about the dead one was a nice bit about how much I enjoyed her company. So
yeah.
If Diamond does die, that's going to be a little bit of a tougher sell, because that one's not not as pro Diamond as the other one was. But it was fun, and you know, I understand a lot of people are kind of bristle at doing like an online comedy show. And yeah. On paper, it is a terrible idea, but and you know, I've seen some that were better than others, and there are terrible aspects to it, but it's never going to be the same as performing for a room full of a good audience, but there's enough good in it that it's worth doing. And a lot of the bad stuff is stuff that can be avoided. And I don't know how long this is going to last before we can start doing shows again, but there's lessons to be learned and there's a certain way to do it. I can't believe I've had to convince people to let the audience turn their mics on so that you can hear the laughs.
Right.
Like that's,
well, it's growing pains though, right? We're in a new world. And if you don't adapt to this, you're not going to be able to enjoy it. I mean, I think currently our schedule for being able to have groups of people together again is January 1st, 2021. That's the soonest we're going to be able to do stuff based on the current government in New Brunswick.
Is that the case? Aren't we going to do the 50 people thing sooner than that?
No.
Not a problem for an open mic, but.
Yeah. I mean, we could maintain less than groups of 10 easily doing open mics here in town, but it does look like, as they're stating right now, we're not going to be able to get people together to do events until then. So
is the event thing separate from just bars being allowed to open?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Every day this information's changing. I find the easiest way for me to accept it is just pick whatever the furthest point out they say we can do stuff is and base everything on that. Because if something happens sooner, bonus. If it doesn't, there's no disappointment.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that I would assume that a comedy show can still happen as soon as bars open. I don't really think there's a big jump from having a bar open versus having a bar open where somebody's in the corner with a microphone. That's not really significantly different.
Yeah. But at the same time,
have to limit how many people can be in there at a time though.
You got how close they can sit and everything else.
Yeah. But like a crowded bar with no entertainment going on is probably just as dangerous as a comedy show.
But I don't know when we're going to see stuff open here in New Brunswick specifically.
Yeah.
Especially considering we're almost like in our second wave. It's just our second wave of knowing what's going on. Because, well, technically yesterday we doubled our amount of cases.
I don't know if two people counts as a wave. that's more of a ripple. But
it's a start, right?
Yeah.
And the more we test, I mean, we were basing on having nobody in New Brunswick on COVID with less than 1% of the population tested. I don't know about you, but I haven't been able to base anything on knowing less than 1% of something.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it, and it's always turned out terrible. But I usually know better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. Things have changed. Like, when they first locked it down, they thought that everything was going to be more severe than it actually ended up being. I think the death rate they were thinking, like the percentage of people who get it who will also die, was a lot higher than now. I think it's less than 1%. I've heard as low as like 0.4, but it could be higher than that. But yeah, less than 1%, which isn't great. You don't want anybody to die. But
also, we're never going to have really good numbers on this until about 5 years after it's done anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other wrinkle is the asymptomatic people.
Yeah.
But that's something that, unless we're going to keep everything shut down until there's a vaccine, then there's no way that those asymptomatic people aren't going to spread it. But in theory, if everybody who has it behaves themselves and it works itself out after 2 weeks, you can't really spread it if nobody has it. But
exactly. But we don't know who does or doesn't. I think the real big thing for us is going to be quick tests that you can basically do yourself.
Yeah.
There's a couple of companies, I think Luminol out of Fredericton has just developed a test that is basically like doing a diabetes test.
Yeah.
So you can knock that out 15 minutes by yourself, open your finger, and it'll tell you if you do or do not have a strain of COVID, which that's a really wide net to throw.
Yeah.
But to have an idea whether you have something and whether we should look at further testing with you would be super handy if it's something that everybody could basically do in their home.
Yeah, and if well, you're not going to have people doing it in line to go into a store, but you can at least, if it's cheap and readily available, employees can at least get tested every day before when they show up to work. I'm not sure what the situation is in Canada, but, you know, I have eschewed of the sources that I'm listening to and in the States, but like it seems to be that a big roadblock to the testing is kind of the hoops that you need to jump through to get like FDA approval or whatever the Canadian equivalent of that is.
Exactly. That's why Canada is looking at specifically the one that just tests this for COVID in general, not specifically COVID-19,
yeah.
Because those tests are already approved.
Right.
And it's almost using it for what it's for, but a little off book.
Yeah.
Because it will detect whether or not you've got COVID-19, but it'll detect whether you've got any other run of COVID. And sure, you might have something that's non-contagious,
yeah.
But to know that you've got something at all and that we should look at you.
Yeah, well, and it makes a difference if it's going to give a false positive or a false negative, because a false negative is probably more dangerous than a false positive.
Oh, 100%. Because worst case, with a false positive, you isolate yourself too.
Yeah, or you go and get a proper one at a hospital.
You got it.
Find out for sure.
The false negative rate on some of the tests that are currently approved for use is still like 30%, which is kind of high.
Yeah, I'd rather have something that's got a 30% failure rate than just not have any option at all.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it behooves us to look at as many possible ways to test our population as possible. It's expensive.
Yeah.
But it's knowledge is power, right?
Yeah, well, and I think even opening up the floodgates on whoever wants to come up with a test, that kind of accelerates the testing phase of the test. And if you've got, you know, and I don't have any problem with somebody making a profit off this either. Like, I'm not like, boo-hoo, why should you? Like, no, we're in a situation where we need somebody to make something for us. So, yeah, if somebody can solve our problem, then we should reward them for it.
Oh, exactly. I mean,
and if there's 15 different companies making tests, let them, and we'll find out pretty quick which ones are garbage.
Oh, exactly.
Even if it's just to check for whatever, whether or not we base any major decisions on the results of those tests is another story. But
yeah, it'd just be nice to have something a little more set up and secure than what we're currently working with.
Yeah.
Which is virtually nothing.
Yeah. Well, and I haven't heard much talk about, like, they've talked about testing and they've talked about a vaccine. I haven't heard much lately off, like, the actual treatment. If you have it, here's some medicine that we will help you not die from it. I'm not sure what's going on with that.
The problem with treatment is, as it stands, based on our understanding of it right now, you treat it like you would a common cold.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Well, I've heard some of the early stuff they were doing. I think they were putting people on ventilators, and that turned out to make the problem worse.
Depending on the position, yeah, it definitely can make it worse. But it's one of those. It's nice to have a tool in your pocket because if you think of it like how it attacks is very similar to how pneumonia would work, and it's a lot better to let pneumonia heal on its own.
Yeah.
Than it is to throw you on a ventilator. But if you get to the point where you need a ventilator, you're kind of way far gone and need something. And for some people it works, for some people it doesn't. And it's sad, but I'd rather have a 50-50 you live in than we're pretty sure you're just going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think about the whole response in general? I don't really know what your political leanings are. I've got some assumptions based on what you post on Facebook, but.
My political leanings are weird. I sit smack dab in the middle of far right and far left because I feel ideas on both sides are amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really weird, but I think, so a lot of people are upset because it's like the government's telling us to stay home. The government's making us do this. Yeah, I don't like the idea of the government telling me to stay home, but they're not the ones who are really telling me. They're reinforcing what the doctors are saying.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree with that. But on the other hand, it's just, even if it's a good idea right now, it's if we have, like, I'm not big on pieces of paper and documents and whatever, but, you know, if we have this system set up and there are limits on, okay, this person, this is their job, these are the things that they can do.
Yeah.
If even when it's a good idea, they'll be like, well, actually, we're going to do this other thing that we're not supposed to be allowed to do because we need to. Then that, yeah. I feel like that's opening the floodgates to, well, let's do it again for this other thing.
Yeah, I don't like it, but at the same time, New Brunswick's a good example of it. It is working.
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing well. We've got the lowest rate in
North America.
Yeah, in North America. And, you know, it's kind of, politicians like to take credit for things that isn't necessarily due. Like, it could just be because we're spread out, and it could, and we, you know, we could play, maybe it could have happened this way. And, you know, there's, I don't know. I feel like a lot of places would have shut down voluntarily if it was, like, strongly recommended by scientists. I also agree that there's a lot of dumbasses that are just going to not do the right thing.
I would argue a lot of places wouldn't close down voluntarily. Yeah. Only because a lot of those places that we would expect to close down voluntarily don't voluntarily pay their staff a living wage.
Yeah.
So a lot of them wouldn't be able to voluntarily close down because that also wouldn't allow a lot of their insurances to kick in or government fundings to kick in. So basically by having someone say, big, high up, say, yeah, you're all going to close, that kicks in. I know for a lot of small businesses and even bigger businesses that have insurances against things like this happening, it ensures that they still are profitable as a business because they're getting that insurance money.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not big on any kind of a government intervention, but if they're going to do something, I would rather they incentivize people to do the right thing rather than punishing them for doing the wrong thing. So if there was like, we think that you should shut down and don't worry about it, we've got your back if you do so. But I haven't looked into it this week, but I've been kind of paying attention. Like, Sweden is kind of doing that kind of hands-off thing. Like, the elderly and... What's that?
And it turned out bad for them.
I don't think it has. There's a lot, like, I talked about it on last week's show. A lot of the headlines on the articles are like, this is a nightmare. And then you read the article and it's like, well, it could be.
They had more people die in 1 week because of this than any other week in the history of their country.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, that to me, I mean, okay, so some of those people maybe were going to die anyway, but that's still a pretty good indicator that things aren't playing out super well.
Okay. I was not familiar with that update. I will look into it though and adjust my thoughts accordingly.
Kind of been gone to shit there.
Yeah. Okay. I will look into it. But yeah, taking a snapshot at any given time, if those people all happened in a week as opposed to the exact same number of people that would have over several months, as long as the hospitals don't get overwhelmed and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a give and take. Like, it's, I don't like to sound like I want to say, well, some people will die, but it's worth it. That sounds cold-hearted. That's not what I mean when I say it. I'm just disappointed that we are being given this kind of black and white, you're either for money or for people. Which team are you on? And it's not like nobody is going to die of poverty if we tank our business stuff, and like people are going to be unemployed for a long time and all that stuff, and all of the tax money being sent out to people, myself included. I'm collecting my check.
But me too. I got my Trudeau bucks.
We're kicking the can down the road, and it's going to all need to be paid for one way or another. It's either going to come away from something else that we want, or they're just going to print more money, and the money that we already have is going to be worth less, and everything's going to cost more.
Although I think we're going to see, we're going to get in, our money is going to be worth less. But when you look at the response our biggest trading partner currently has, I don't think we're going to be worried too much, because their money is going to be worth less soon enough.
Yeah, I think they're doing an even worse job than we are. But I keep seeing the daily, like, Trudeau announces $80 trillion for this, like, and the people are crying about the oil companies and stuff.
Like, well, the oil we were expecting. I don't know about you, but it may not have been this year, but it was going to be soon that demand for that was going to drop.
Yeah, and I think it should. Like, this is where I deviate, because, you know, like, I'm mostly libertarian anarchist stuff, but a lot of people hear that as like conservative talking points. So that's one of the places where I deviate from conservative, is like, I don't give two shits about the oil company. If somebody's going out of business, let them.
Yep.
I don't think the government should be propping up any business that can't work itself out.
I have no problem with smaller businesses getting a little bit of a hand. Nothing major.
Yeah, well, if it's this...
If you're a multi-billion dollar organization and you couldn't save for a rainy day, fuck you.
Yeah. But yeah, something like that. Like, they've been making billions of dollars, or like, boo-hoo, Saudi Arabia is flooding the market and they can sell oil for cheaper than we can. And it doesn't make any sense to me when they talk about, well, the oil industry, it creates all these jobs. And like, but it's not. If it can't sustain itself without taxpayer money, where are those jobs coming from? Why don't we just spend that money on something other than giving these people jobs? They can give them different jobs and something that works better.
Or just give them the money.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, you'd probably save more money paying all of those people on the oil rigs than handing the money to their CEOs who are going to pay out everybody between the top and the bottom.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, and I don't often agree with, like, Green Party stuff, but, like, Elizabeth May was like, let them die, whatever. Like, sure.
I don't know why we're so worried about our oil industry at all. Like, yeah, it seems to be a big employer, but we're producing a product nobody wants.
Yeah, and, you know, if it is just a short term because Saudi Arabia and Russia is messing with the market with it, let them for a while, and if that peters out and it becomes profitable again, the oil's still there in the ground, fire it up.
Well, my thing with it is if we look at our oil versus everybody else's oil, look at it like a farm. If Saudi Arabia is selling the nicest apples anybody's ever seen, and our equivalent in oil would be, we're selling those crab apples that are half rotted that you pick up off the ground. Why are we even worried about competing in that industry? Why haven't we looked at something else?
Yeah.
Like, our oil is virtually worthless.
Yeah. I'm not big on the protectionism stuff. Like, I think if there's somewhere else in the world that's better at producing a certain commodity, then we should let them, and we can pool our resource towards stuff that we're good at.
Oh, exactly. Our agricultural industry, even our mining industry, is really good when it comes to precious metals and resources and that.
Yeah.
Those should be where we're looking at. I mean, even hard good production should be something we should be looking at.
Yeah,
why are we shipping all our wood to other places to make products? Why aren't we making
them? Yeah, and I think most of the stuff that that people complain about and kind of attribute it to capitalism is not because of capitalism on its own. It's because of government kind of tinkering with capitalism. And if bad businesses were going out, could just tank because they're worthless without government money or even favors. And as far as like special rules that helps keep other people out of the industry and all that stuff, then I think it would be more self-corrective, and most of like the evil corporation type stuff, like, well, during the last recession when the banks were giving out house loans to people that couldn't possibly pay them back, if they didn't know that they were too big to fail and that they were going to get a big bailout anyway, then that should be on them. If they're going to make a dumb risk and it blows up in their face, then fine. But as long as that safety net's there for people to behave badly, they're not going to correct the behavior.
Oh, exactly. See, I've always looked at them. Yeah, some government favor with some businesses could go a long way. A good example would be somebody like Boeing. Boeing, we gave a lot of money to help prop up their business, which I think is crazy when we were sitting in a position where we needed planes for our military. Why, instead of giving them billions of dollars, we take the billions of dollars we were going to spend on planes and give them that to make us planes?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's enough government work out there and enough government contracts and enough government things that if you just ignore and yes, I understand there's a lot of bidding process to make things fair and everything else. But what we wind up doing is propping up businesses outside of Canada when we could just make a Canadian solution for our own businesses, give them that money that we're going to pay a company overseas.
All right. Well, I think we'll close it on that. I think I've got enough for the episode. So thank you for joining me, Mike Rogers.
Love this stuff.
This is coming out on Monday, so the show that we're doing on Saturday will have already happened. I assume you don't have anything else to promote.
I just have the show on Saturday. Oh, I can promote me and my mom selling masks. I mean, it's been an interesting endeavor.
Yeah. So how dare you profit off of our misery?
We're actually not profiting. We sell the masks for about $5 a pop. It takes every hour we can crank out about 2 per person. Mm-hmm. And anybody who needs a mask but doesn't have the $5 to get one, just tell me and I'll give you one. We don't ask for the money. We put it as a pay what you can. If you can afford it, do. If you can't, don't. That's our big thing. We just want to make sure everybody's got them.
That's good. And if you can afford it, give them $10 or $20 for a mask.
Well, because all the money that we're getting is going directly back into buying more material, more supplies to make more, to give more. So.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
The boy in the bubble trying to avoid trouble. Trapped in the house when the trap ain't the hustle. Trapped like a mouse when the cheese is diseased. And it's times like these, I wish I could puff trees. And I can't stop pacing the crib. Yelling at my kid when she doesn't understand that she touched the elevator button with a bare hand. And I just start yelling at her loud as I can. Cause the news don't stop and the numbers keep climbing. It's hard to keep rhyming when family members are dying. The pressure keep building in the cabin fever kicks in. I can't differentiate what's fact or fiction. I'm eating and I'm snacking and I'm packing on the pounds. When I'm going to the store, I'm packing extra rounds. Paranoid shit that doesn't even apply. But I know how humans get when food's in short supply. Everybody want heaven and nobody wanna die. You built a castle out of toilet paper to the sky. The devils always think that they angels, so ironic. And we watching Joe Exotic and becoming so neurotic. And we don't trust shit but a YouTube series. Now middle class moms love conspiracy theories. Is it 5G or man-made or bat shit? I just keep washing my hands cause fuck that shit. Catch me outside wiping down groceries. Looking sideways, a motherfucker's too close to me. I'm a product of Bill Cooper, ain't shit sweet. Stay 6 feet back or 6 feet deep.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
And that's our show. I'd like to thank my guest Mike Rogers for joining me on this, and I'd like to thank you for watching or listening, however you're doing this. If you like it, tell somebody else about it. Goodbye.